dozen civilians were killed. The presence of forces will therefore ensure a sense of security among the residents.
However, residents complain about the humiliating and disrespectful behavior of the security forces.
Authorities should accommodate or relocate the entire neighborhood. The presence of troops around our homes has made us gripped. Not only this, the usual frisking on roads is also disturbing our mental peace, and we are often being humiliated. The entire population is looked at through the prism of terrorism and terrorists.
Kashmir is the world's largest militarized zone and the longest pending dispute. India and Pakistan have fought wars over the territory since the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. The two countries rule the region in parts but claim it in full. After the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, New Delhi promised equality to the people of Kashmir. Analysts say 2 years on, people of Kashmir have instead developed a deeper sense of insecurity and alienation. And so far, New Delhi has done least to address their grievances. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Questions and answers. In Islamic upbringing,
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids? That is from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm your host Musa Al-Bahalili, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss issues, questions, and other relevant circumstances or topics parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers are based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the household of the Prophet, and of course of the Prophet himself, peace be upon them all. Joining us in our studio is our guest speaker and dear friend Sayyid Abdullah Musul, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. So our topic today in our sequence of understanding the positioning of the child in a family in relation to other siblings, today we are going to talk about a boy living in a family who only is dominated by female siblings. What should we know about such a situation, dear Sayyid? Is there something that we should keep in mind, or is just a family at the end of the day?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. Now, in this situation that you mentioned, it is extremely important that the parents pay attention whether they have one male in the middle of females or one female in the middle of males, be it two, three, or more.
Right.
Now, for example, let us look at it from a male who is in between females. You would have a child who is, for example, who cries a lot. You would see him, he's very emotional. He gets stressed emotionally more than his comrades or than his friends. When he talks, you find that he's soft in his speech. He
would soft have spoken, right.
Yeah, he speaks softly. He would shy out more. His body posture and his movement would be like very feminine. Then you understand that this is a boy who lives with a majority of girls.
Right.
And this is just not something of his fault. That's just the natural cause of things.
Right.
When you put something in the middle of something, he would definitely act like them. I'm not sure if you said this to me or someone else said this to me when they done the experiment of putting an egg of a bird. I think I read that on TV or saw it on TV. In the middle of eggs of ducks.
Right.
When this egg hatched and he saw the mother was a duck and all those around him were ducks, he automatically assumed
that he was a duck.
He was a duck too.
Right.
And when he saw them walking towards the water, he was walking with them. He didn't even know that as a bird he can fly. Because he grew in such an environment where he saw ducks and he thought he was a duck.
This is common also in families where there are dogs as pets, and they bring in a cat, a young kitten.
Mm.
As it grows and it hasn't seen any other cats, it has only seen dogs, it starts to act like a dog.
Exactly. So this is a proven theory that when you put something, even human beings, I remember like back a few years back when they found this child in a forest where he was acting like animals and he was speaking with animals.
Right, like a savage animal.
Because he thought he was an animal.
Right. Dear Sayyid, we will continue this discussion very shortly because we'll be going on a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear Sayyid. Let us pick off where we left off. We just mentioned that how important it is that imprinting is on the development of a person. We just mentioned before going on a break that a child was found living in the wild. And we said that this child was not living like a human at all. They were living like an animal. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us further.
So we are saying that when you have, whether it's a human being, an animal, amongst different creatures, he would act like them. So with a boy, it's natural that he would act like a girl, dressed like a girl. You see that a lot where boys trying to dress up like girls or act like girls or talk like girls. It's just because he's raised in an environment where the majority are girls. Now, switch the situation. Put a girl in the middle of boys, and you have what we call a tummy boy.
Right.
You would have a girl that acts like a boy.
Very manly.
Very manly. Right. She's thick voice. Even in her body posture,
the way she talks,
she's very strong, very straightforward. I currently have a friend, a lady female, one of my dear sisters, and she's very, very masculine in the way she talks and the way she deals with people. I said to her, did you forget that you're actually a woman? She's like, I can't help. She's like, I can't even hang around with girls. I had to hang around men. I'm like, what do you want? What are you on about? She's like, because I was raised in a boy environment, and I never felt that, you know, I was never in touch with my feminine side. So it caused her to constantly act and walk and talk with people as if she's a male without any, you know, what we call haya.
Right.
And that struck is when I saw her, that was very striking. I said to her, sister, you know, mashallah, you're mu'mina, your knowledge does not, they do not match
with the way that
you're talking.
Here.
You're talking with a man as if he's your brother. She's like, oh, sorry, Sayyid, you know, this is my situation.
Right.
So her growing up with males obviously dominated her psyche, and she acts as a male. So this is very natural. As parents, this is very dangerous for us to keep children in such an environment. For example, I'm not saying, well, it's like someone might say, well, what do I do? Throw them outside? No.
Right.
So what we need to do is we need to create that balance. For example, with boys who lives among girls, such a boy, you need to make sure he's out of the house more often, spends more time with his boyfriends. Spends more time playing outside, spends more time communicating with boys, getting to see them. So you create that balance yourself. Same thing with the girl in the middle of the boys. You create an environment for her where she's constantly have girlfriends, where she's constantly going around girls, being around girls, hanging around girls, so she could do girl stuff.
Naturally.
So, yeah. So as parents, we need to understand their situation and where they are located in the sequence of the family tree, be it the first, be it the little, be it the last, be it the boy, be it the girl. So all of these factors change the child and make a huge difference on the child, because God forbid, if we have a boy who's in the middle of girls and the parents would neglect that, he might go stray. He might go do a lot of bad things. Right. Same thing for the girl. If she thinks she's a boy, she hangs around too much with boys, God forbid, she might do a lot of things that are haram.
Right. And on that striking note, we'll go on a quick break.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Be just between your children when granting things to them, in the same manner that you would like them to be just with you, in obedience and kindness."
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion, dear Sayyid.
Now, let's move to a situation, for example, where a parent might say, "Well, I have one child only. I don't have many. I don't have an older, I don't have a middle, I don't have a younger. I have just one." Now, with one child also, parents also make the mistake, because he's only one, so you'll find parents giving him extra care, extra love, extra affection, extra of everything, more than when he needs. And that itself, just having to say that, you would get the idea of what could go wrong.
Right.
Now, with everything, like we say, you know, there's a hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi, he says that people are like trees. Oh, he talks about the heart of a person. If you give it too much water, you'll kill it.
Right.
So a child that is alone in a family, if you give him too much love, too much affection, too much care, you would literally kill him, in the sense of, you know, his mentality, in the sense of his spirituality, in the sense of his personality, his identity, right? And usually that makes him more dependent on his parents than anything else. So he's constantly depending on his parent to do things for him.
Right.
Because he's the only one, and they would do whatever he wants. They would give him whatever he wants. So he has zero self-dependency.
Right.
Because he's getting everything of everything. And then you find this such a child, he has low self-esteem. When he's in the outside, he is very lazy. He's very shy.
Uncomfortable with the situation.
Yeah, he's right. Always relying on others to do things for him. It's like he can't do something for himself. Like the simplest things, he would get someone else to do it for him. You find him that he's constantly scared to be away from people, or being away from, like he can't be by himself. And all these things happens because he was given too much of everything.
Especially attention, if you might argue.
Whatever it is, whether it's attention, whether it's love, whether it's affection, whether it is his needs, he's getting too much of everything that caused him to be in the situation. And
right.
As a parent, because he's the only one, it doesn't mean you go out of your way. Because as parents, we always want our children to be at the best of everything. We want them to succeed. Their success depends on me giving them just enough.
Right.
Giving them what's required. Because he's the only one doesn't mean I have to spoil him. It doesn't mean I have to give him whatever he wants. It doesn't mean I have to do everything for him.
Right.
No, you need to make him reliant on himself. Imagine that you have two more kids and you're being fair to them.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
In a way or another, you need to make sure that you do not overdo it. You do not give him too much water that will kill him. So always, as a parent, you need to maintain. So therefore, if we get to summarize that, it's very important for us to understand where our children are. Are they the first? Are they the middle? Are they at the end? Boys, girls? Are they alone? And so on and so forth.
The old facts are in.
Yeah, and act accordingly, at least this way, knowing that, it should give us a chance to give our children at least a very fair chance in life.
Right. Dear Sayyid, just a short question. What about a family where the only siblings a child has are boys and he himself is a male? Is that also bad for the child? Or like maybe a boy with three brothers, for example, or a girl with three sisters or two sisters? Is that also negative?
No. So if they are all the same gender, obviously we have no issue. Because girls will always be girls and boys will always be boys. They will do what boys do. Girls will do what girls do. So we have no problem in them being in the same gender. The only problem that you have to worry about being in the same gender is their location, their spots, their sequence.
Right.
Are they the first, second, last? So that always applies to whether they are boys and girls. As far as gender concerned, if they are of the same gender, then you have no issue.
Dear Sayyid, I thank you for your insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Dear listeners, if you have any questions, comments, or just some feedback, please contact us at our email at englishradio@irrb.ir. You can also visit our website at parstoday.com. Alternatively, you can also find us on the various social media accounts we have, on, for example, Facebook or Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
In the limelight.
At the beginning of the year, Democrats knew they had a rare opportunity to make transformational change. With control of the White House and Congress, they stuffed ambitious programs meant to address decades of inaction on childcare, paid leave, poverty, housing, and climate, and to cover holes in our healthcare system into a single package. The article you're about to hear has been published by the New York Times Opinion Section. The article has been written by Bryce Covert, a journalist who focuses on the economy. The piece is titled, Joe Manchin, This is What We Can't Afford. Beginning of the year, Democrats knew they had a rare opportunity to make transformational change. With control of the White House and Congress, they stuffed ambitious programs meant to address decades of inaction on childcare, unpaid leave, poverty, housing, and climate, and to cover holes in our healthcare system into a single package. Those dreams have run aground on a few holdout Democratic lawmakers. Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema have insisted on skimpy spending numbers, even if the spending is offset by higher revenues. Senator Manchin is forcing excruciating decisions between Democratic priorities, but he insists that it's in the name of fiscal responsibility, of not incurring too great a cost for the government. When President Biden released a sharply pared-down framework meant to appease the centrists, Senator Manchin refused to sign off because he's worried about the impact it will have on our national debt, our economy, and the American people. Now, Senator Manchin is signaling that he wants to slow walk his party's legislative package because of increasing inflation, even though the spending will be doled out over a decade and will have no impact on price increases today, while it will eventually help ease household budget crunches. What Senator Manchin fails to understand is that we have been enduring enormous costs from our failure to do these things and will continue to incur them if we don't do enough to meet this moment. The pain is borne by individual Americans who struggle to flourish and stay healthy. but every single one of us suffers from an enfeebled economy and a poorly functioning society. Inaction comes with its own price. We pay it in the form of foregone human potential. We pay it in the form of lower productivity and a smaller workforce, and an economy failing to function at its full capacity. And we also pay for it in human lives. These are very real consequences. To ignore this side of the ledger and focus solely on how much is being spent is, at the very least, ignorant, and at worst, cruel. The United States has an exceptionally high childhood poverty rate. By failing to offer parents more support in the early years, we pay a huge penalty. Robust economic research has found that giving children more resources when they're young results in fewer infant deaths, improved health, longer lives, less interaction with the criminal justice system, and higher earnings. Those outcomes are vitally important in each individual child's life, but they're also important to everyone. The whole economy reaps the benefit of less spending on medical care and higher tax payments from healthier, more productive individuals. The opposite, of course, is also true. If we fail to give children the resources they need to thrive, then we incur the cost through poorer health and reduced potential. Children bear the burden of lower income and shortened lives. Even tinkering with the current expansion of the child tax credit, which right now is sending nearly all parents' monthly payment of $300 for children under the age of 6, and $250 for older children through the end of the year, quickly exposes more kids to these harms. Imposing a $60,000 income threshold on those payments going forward, as Senator Manchin at one point proposed, would take it away from 37.4 million American children. President Biden has proposed keeping it as is, but extending it for only 1 year, threatening a chance to significantly reduce poverty and hardship for good. Another way to invest in children, and at the same time to invest in their parents, is to ensure that families can secure and afford high-quality childcare and early education. Reams of research have shown that there are huge rewards to be gained for children's development from robust universal early education, gains that follow them throughout their lives. Childcare also frees parents, and in particular mothers, to work outside of the home. Universal preschool in the District of Columbia, introduced in 2009, increased the labor force participation rate for mothers with young children by 10 percentage points. Universal childcare in Quebec in Canada, begun in 1996, helped the province achieve the highest rate of prime-age working women in the world. The resulting increase in tax revenue has more than covered the cost of Quebec's program. But by and large, the United States is paying the price of a failure to invest significant federal money in childcare and in early education, and we will continue down that road if childcare funding is cut back or stripped from the Democrats' package. Labor force participation for American mothers is 19% lower than for similar childless women. As recently as 1990, we led the world in how many women were in our workforce, but we've since slipped back to the bottom of the rankings, and a lack of investment in childcare is one of the main culprits. Another culprit is a lack of guaranteed paid family leave. President Biden originally planned to ensure all workers 12 weeks of pay for a new child, serious illness, military deployment, death in the family, or in the case of domestic violence and sexual assault, which would have allowed 18 million people, more than a tenth of the entire civilian labor force, to take paid leave each year. ditching this provision from the package, which President Biden did to appease Senator Manchin, means those millions of people will be faced with either losing income to care for themselves or their families, or neglecting that care and continuing to work. Guaranteeing only 4 weeks, as House leadership has proposed, won't get postpartum parents or seriously sick spouses terribly far. The United States now guarantees 12 weeks of unpaid family leave, and that's just for the 56% who qualify. Without guaranteed pay, 7% of all employees in 2018 needed to take leave but didn't, and the majority said it was because they couldn't afford to. Many of those who did manage to take unpaid leave experienced financial difficulties. More than three-quarters of people who got partial pay or nothing at all cut back on their spending, and about 30% borrowed money or put off paying bills. Nearly one in five had to go on public assistance. Paid leave, on the other hand, would not only give people the money they need to survive and stay out of debt, it would also keep them attached to their jobs by allowing them the chance to step away without a financial penalty when life demands it. That's true not just for new parents who need time to bond with and care for new babies, but also for those whose loved ones suffer a health emergency or a new disability. An estimated 6 million extra people would stay connected to the labor force if we had paid leave. Without it, we'll keep hemorrhaging workers. Some of the people we're losing are forced to serve away to care for disabled or elderly family members. More than 800,000 people are on waiting lists to receive professional home-based care through Medicaid, and that's just for those who have spent down their assets or never had enough to begin with to qualify for the program. Democrats had at first proposed spending $400 billion on home-based care for the disabled and the elderly, which would have been enough to clear Medicaid's waiting list. But President Biden and his legislative allies have now reduced that figure by nearly two-thirds. Without enough federal funding to ensure that Americans can get the professional care at home that they deserve, the responsibility often falls to family members. More than 40 million Americans already provide unpaid care to older relatives, which makes it difficult to work for pay. Children who care for elderly parents stand to lose more than $300,000 over their lifetimes in wages and retirement benefits. And once again, it's not just an individual burden. The whole economy loses billions of dollars in productivity when people are forced to miss work to take care of their family members. The aged also deserve to have insurance to care for their entire bodies, including their ears, eyes, and teeth. Most rely on Medicare for their health insurance, but it doesn't cover dental, vision, or hearing treatment. If it were expanded to cover those body parts, an estimated 62 million older Americans would benefit. But President Biden's framework includes only hearing benefits. Without a full expansion, older Americans who can't afford private coverage will suffer with rotting teeth and deteriorating eyesight. An additional 2.2 million people may be left high and dry if Democrats fail to help those who live in the 12 states that have refused to expand Medicaid. People who qualify neither for the program nor for the subsidies that make Affordable Care Act exchange coverage affordable will continue to face catastrophic financial burden. In one study's terms, when they need unexpected surgery but don't have insurance. They'll face higher maternal mortality, more opioid deaths, and a greater risk of suicide. As we keep incurring thousands of needless deaths a year, Americans will pay for congressional inaction with their lives. Democrats originally included enough money for housing to cut homelessness in half within 5 years, but that funding is now half of what it was. Without enough resources, the approximately 580,000 Americans who have no homes of their own will continue to live with poorer health and lower employment. We'll all be saddled with the extra cost of trying to keep them healthy and offering them public assistance instead of a stable place to live. Giving them housing, on the other hand, quickly recoups most of the costs through the benefits of improved health and improved employment. Half a glass of water is always better than an empty one, but Democrats are at risk of wasting an opportunity to show the country what they can do with a full one by putting their slim majorities to work doing as much as they can to help real people and save real lives. They have the chance to create a healthier, happier, more productive country. The details of the legislative package are certain to change as negotiations continue. There will be immense pressure for lawmakers to lower their ambitions in the name of fiscal responsibility. But there's nothing responsible about allowing more children's potential to be stunted, to keep women from their full economic potential, to let people's health be harmed and lives cut short. The price of failing to deliver is more than we can afford.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States has decided to bolster its military ties to NATO ally Greece. The military agreement was concluded during the recent visit of the Greek Minister of Foreign Affairs, Nikos Dendias, to Washington. The new agreement will remain in force indefinitely unless one of the parties withdraws. The military agreement will make Greece the U.S. military logistics center in the region.
Greece has been in America's orbit and has enjoyed a strategic partnership with America ever since the end of the Greek Civil War, in which the Greek nationalists triumphed over the Greek communists as a result of the military assistance which America provided to them.
The U.S. will also have increased military presence in the Alexandroupolis, Crete, the Tochoro and Larissa regions. The renewed agreement gives the U.S. the right to access any Greek military bases and to expand the areas for the U.S. forces to conduct military drills. The U.S. Navy will also be able to go to Bulgaria and Romania without using Turkey's straits. The agreement will significantly reduce the importance of Turkey regarding Black Sea access. Greece has been trying to position itself strategically in the region.
The Americans are encountering some problems with Erdogan. So by America and Greece concluding this extraordinary military deal, it is a way of the Americans placing subtle pressure on Erdogan, not on the Turkish state, but on Erdogan personally.
In recent months, the U.S. has sent heavy military equipment to the Balkans and European countries through the port of Alexandroupolis, with plans for further military shipments in November. Back in November 2020, Greece submitted a request to the U.S. Department of Defense to purchase F-35 fighter jets. The proposal was welcomed by the U.S. In other words, it would not be surprising if the F-35s, which were not given to Turkey, were given to the neighboring countries soon. The military cooperation between the U.S. and Greece comes amid a row between Ankara and Athens. Greece and Turkey are both NATO members, but they are at loggerheads over a number of issues. Back in 2020, Turkey dispatched Oryx Reis and warships, escorting it to survey an area between Cyprus and the Greek island of Crete in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. The mission was meant to explore oil and natural gas in that region. That led to an escalation of tensions, with the two NATO allies launching air and naval drills of their own in the waters.
The major reason behind this agreement, this military agreement between Washington and Athens, is a result of America having gathered some of its allies from the Mediterranean, North Africa, and the Middle East in an Eastern Mediterranean partnership. Now, what am I referring to? Well, I'm referring to the reserves of oil and gas which have been found adjacent to Cyprus.
Greece has also accused Turkey of acting like a pirate state in the Aegean Sea in regards to migrants. Athens has called on the EU to put pressure on Ankara to meet its international obligations. Athens frequently blames Ankara for failing to crack down on smugglers who send out migrants in unsafe boats from its shores in breach of a 2016 accord with the European Union. Under the accord, Turkey was to reduce the flow of migrants through its territory to EU countries such as Greece, return for billions in financial aid.
Well, of course, Turkey is a dangerously expansionist country. After all, Turkey illegally occupies the north of Cyprus. Turkey illegally occupies the northwest of Syria. However, there is very little chance of a conflict between Turkey and Greece. Why? Because both countries are in NATO and both countries enjoy a strategic partnership with America.
It is believed Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is using the migrant issue to put more pressure on the European Union. The military cooperation between Greece and the U.S. would give Athens a greater leverage in its confrontation with Turkey. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has not made it a secret in the aspirations that it has to have influence in the entire West Asia region and beyond.
World temperatures are rising fast, and that is mostly because humans are using fossil fuels like oil, gas, and coal for their transportation, industries, and homes. The use of these fuels releases a great amount of greenhouse gases, mostly carbon dioxide, which trap the sun's heat and make the earth warmer. That is global warming. This phenomenon is leading to long-term shifts in temperatures and weather patterns, which is known as climate change. The dangerous trend is causing extreme weather conditions. The impact is being felt in many parts of the world, but the worst could be yet to come. Combating climate change requires concrete measures by the international community, especially the world's largest polluters like the United States and China. But scientists have repeatedly warned that global efforts to tackle climate change are way off track. Global warming and climate change have been under the spotlight in the Scottish city of Glasgow over the past 2 weeks as delegations from around the world attended the UN Climate Change Conference. Participants tried hard to find a way forward to contain what many scientists have called the biggest crisis of humanity. The world's largest industrial nations long struggled to find common ground, but an unexpected declaration by the United States and China this week raised hopes for a breakthrough.
Certain elements that will promote ambition.
The United States and China have pledged to work together to achieve the 1.5 degrees Celsius temperature goal set out in 2015. China's climate envoys, as the two sides hammered out the declaration following some 30 meetings over the past year. U.S. President Joe Biden and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping are expected to hold a follow-up meeting soon. The announcement was welcomed by the United Nations and the European Union. But global campaigning network Greenpeace says both countries need to take concrete action. Some experts have noted that this week's declaration was short on commitments that would significantly reduce the emissions of harmful gases like CO2.
Everyone is being very careful not to say anything definitive. There are a few dates, few specific levels things we'll get to, and few amounts of money that will go to developing countries. So there's pretty much nothing that doesn't need to be more specific. You know, we're all good guys and we're going to cooperate and make this work. Well, we've heard that before.
Scientists warn that the world faces a race against time. Climate Action Tracker Group has calculated that the world is facing 2.4 degrees of warming by the end of the 21st century. If the world fails to act, scientists estimate that it could even exceed 4 degrees in the future. That will probably lead to destructive heat waves, with many millions of people around the world losing their homes as sea levels rise. Temperature rises must be contained quickly if the international community is determined to avoid the worst consequences of climate change. That means global warming needs to be kept at 1.5 degrees Celsius in the coming decades. That seems like a far-fetched wish, given the record of the worst polluters.
I'm not feeling overly optimistic. I'm not really feeling optimistic at all, because it seems like this is just more grandstanding by the particularly China and the United States and even the European Union, who have gotten things, the developing countries have gotten things to this point.
All eyes are now on the world's largest emitters to see how they will act.
The United States Federal Bureau of Investigation is taken to court over a lawsuit by three Muslim men that alleges the agency illegally conducted surveillance on them on the basis of their religion. Sheikh Yasir Fazaga, Ali Malik, and Yasser Abdulrahim, the three plaintiffs in the case, argue that the U.S. government has for years invoked national security to escape accountability over its unconstitutional surveillance operations and deny them the chance to present their evidence to the court. Initially filed in 2011, their case was first dismissed by a lower court in favor of the FBI's assertion that allowing it to move forward would pose a national security risk. The trio appealed the ruling, and a federal appeals court later sided with them, paving the way for the case to land in the High Court. The FBI recruited a paid informant to spy on the mosque and other places of worship in the area beginning in 2006. The informant, identified as Craig Monte, had presented himself as a person who wanted to convert to Islam.
They've always tried to label Muslims as potential terrorists,
and investigate them, monitor them, looking in, you know, all their most of their privacy has been breached. All these musts, as we can read and study about, is pretty much, you know, it's open to the FBI to, you know, send in informants, spies, make them feel very uncomfortable, and also a lot of them are saying that they feel like second-class citizens or third-class citizens inside their own country.
Pazaga, the lead plaintiff in the case who is also a therapist, said he was furious when he found out that the FBI informant secretly recorded the personal and confidential sessions he had with his patients for a month. The surveillance operation in Southern California was part of a broader spying program that the U.S. government enforced after 9/11, using various tactics to monitor Muslim communities in the name of national security.
This is a systematic problem in the U.S., and they wanted it to be this way. It's been programmed like this by the U.S. It's because they want to install fear in the American citizens everywhere, so they can also justify invasions to Muslim countries and to, invade different Muslim countries.
The Supreme Court is expected to issue its ruling on the Muslims case by the end of June. Lawyers for the government will argue that the case should be dismissed, as letting it proceed would expose clandestine intelligence operations and harm national security. The FBI has long contended that the information about its informants, methods of surveillance, and who they are monitoring and why should be treated as state secrets. Human rights activists, however, say citing national security concerns is an excuse to avoid admitting that they target people based on their religion. The plaintiffs argue that under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, known as FISA, a judge can review the material and order that it be disclosed. They contend that in a case like theirs, the 1978 law supersedes the state secrets privilege, which was adopted by the Supreme Court in the 1950s. Government lawyers' counter-argument is that FISA was not meant for a case where the government certifies that the disclosure would jeopardize national security. All eyes are on the Supreme Court justices, whose ruling will indicate whether they are willing to protect religious freedoms or if the government has the authority to cover up its illegal activities in the name of national security.
The Mujahideen Khalq terrorist organization has conducted numerous assassinations and bombings against Iranian senior officials and civilians since the 1979 victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Out of the nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the MKO. Yet, the West, which claims to be against terrorism, supports this terrorist group officially. Despite all the crimes committed by the MKO, it is not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the US removed the widely detested terrorist group from their lists of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012, respectively. West even misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor by putting a blind eye to how the MKO spilled the blood of innocent people. On November 4th, the ringleader of MKO, Mariam Rajavi, delivered an online address to an Italian Senate panel on the situation of human rights in Iran. 2 days later, the Secretary of Human Rights Headquarters of the Iranian Judiciary, Kazem Gharibabadi, condemned the session. He slammed Western countries for adopting a selective approach to human rights by allowing the anti-Iran Mujahideen Khalq terrorist organization to hold, quote, ridiculous meetings on the issue in the host countries. He also called on the Italian government to end their dual and destructive policies towards terrorism and human rights. Iran has long complained that the West's backing for terrorist organizations like MKO violates the UN Charter and international principles. The West accuses Iran of human rights violations, yet their double standard policies towards terrorism speak for themselves. Also, in July at a sideline meeting at the 47th session of the United Nations Human Rights Council, diplomats, scholars, and representatives from NGOs criticized Western countries for their hypocrisy on human rights and using it as a geopolitical tool to attack countries that do not serve their interests.
But, you know, groups like NKO have been legitimized as not a terrorist group any longer because it serves a purpose. It's giving Western nations a sort of what they want, creating acts of terrorism in Iran, and indeed assassination of scientists.
The U.S. itself has been long accused of violating human rights. Their violations have been blatant when it comes to racial discrimination, especially against the African American community. The case of George Floyd, an African American man who was murdered by a police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is one example of many. Hezbollah in Lebanon, popular mobilization forces in Iraq, and Ansarullah movement in Yemen are against the interests and policies of the West. Therefore, they are designated as terrorist organizations by Western countries. That's why these extremes have fought hard and are the true defenders of the rights of their countries and regional nations. Meanwhile, MKO terrorists enjoy the freedom of activity in the US and Europe, and even hold regular meetings in which European and American officials make speeches. West's support for such a terrorist cult only exposes their double standards when it comes to terrorist organizations. And let's not forget the Western countries, namely the US, support for one of the biggest violators of human rights, the Israeli regime, an illegitimate regime that has a long list of human rights violations, including the occupation of Palestinian land, illegal settlement activities, inhumane blockade on Palestinians, administrative detentions, and many others.
There needs to be a unity on combating those who commit acts of terrorism internationally, rather than this sort of use of the terrorist group as allies, and then giving them international support and international legitimacy. MKO is a perfect example of this, but unfortunately is not the only one.
The US, Britain, and France are among violators of human rights. They use sanctions to pressure other governments to give in to their demands, while that directly affects the civilian population and causes hardship for them. These countries have not only supported dictatorial regimes like Saudi Arabia, whom they have sold weapons to in a war on Yemen, they have also supported the Israeli regime that violates Palestinian rights. Meanwhile, the West's anti-Iran obsession and shameful support for terrorism smacks of double standards.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini, in his famous work, The Combat with the Self, explains, man is not able to commit sins before a discerning child, and he does not expose his private parts. So how could he expose his private parts before Allah the Exalted and not dread to commit a crime? In the presence of the child, however, with regard to the divine presence, if he has knowledge, he still lacks faith, due to the multiplicity of his sins, which have darkened and blackened his heart, is totally unable to accept such truth and may not even consider them to be likely. Actually, man would not recklessly run wild if he considered it all likely. He need not have certainty that which is reported in the Noble Quran is right, the promises and the threats, and that he should amend his ways and deeds. Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, he has PhD on Islamic science.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, we are with another golden saying of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini, in one of his sayings, has said that we are duty-bound to introduce Islam to the people all over the world. Now, according to his saying, obviously, every single Muslim has a duty, and he needs to propagate or introduce the teachings of Islam to the people and invite people towards Islam. Now, if we talk about the Muslims, how they can invite people if they have not learned their religion properly, and if they do not know, or maybe if they do not have, if they never gone to any seminary, how can they call people? This is a general question that raises minds. Well, the answer is we should call people, we should invite people through our actions. It is our actions that will tell them that what kind of religion are we following. So if our actions are in accordance to the true Islam, this will be the basis of introducing Islam to the world.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Tahan Nabi wa alihi. Sallallahu alayhi. Salli ala Rasul Allah. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Tahan Nabi wa alihi.
Every single Muslim, if they live according to the teachings of the Quran, if their lifestyle is an Islamic lifestyle, if they live according to the teachings of the Prophet and the Quran, then definitely people will come towards Islam, because Islam, where it talks about peace, we say assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you when we see each other. Islam that gives respect to the women, that honors the women, and it gives equal rights to the man and woman. Islam that talks about the rights of the animals, rights of the children, and rights of the neighbors, the rights of the place where we live, where we cannot waste anything, because waste is one of the greater sins. So such a religion that gives importance to the human and the things surrounding him. So we need to basically, with our actions, we need to prove that we are the real Muslims and we live according to the teachings of the Quran. This will be the basis to introduce the Islam to the people all over the world.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
English Radio.